Today is Tuesday, February 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up...
Trump is expected to present himself as a strong leader who is delivering on his campaign promises.
Also ahead, a new research project examines the link between North Korea and the secret police agencies of some Eastern European countries after World War II. And 16 leading global human rights organizations call for an investigation into China's mass incarceration of a major ethnic group. It's all on today's VOA's International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump is expected to praise the U.S. economy and insist on the need for a physical barrier on the U.S. border with Mexico in tonight's State of the Union address. Trump's address was originally scheduled for January 29th, but was postponed to today due to the longest ever U.S. government shutdown caused by the rift between the Republican president and the Democratic majority in Congress over the funding for the border wall. VOA's Zlatissa Hoke reports.
Trump is expected to present himself as a strong leader who is delivering on his campaign promises. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell gave a hint that the success of the U.S. economy could be foremost.
Republicans' pro-growth, pro-family economic policies have helped our nation's job creators and small businesses hit the accelerator, and middle-class families across the country continue to reap the rewards.
The Democrats are prepared to respond, as demonstrated by Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
Tomorrow, the president will say predictably that the state of our union is strong. But the truth is, the state of the Trump economy is failing America's middle class. The state of the Trump health care system is failing American families. And the state of the Trump administration is embroiled in chaos and incompetence.
Trump has acknowledged that he may not be able to get enough congressional support to finance construction of a border wall, his other major campaign promise. He has said he may declare a national emergency to get the necessary funds and could use the State of the Union to push for that option. Senator Lindsey Graham has urged fellow Republicans to support him.
If the Democrats won't work with him, I think it would be bad for the Republicans to undercut him if he tries to put the barriers in place using his power as commander-in-chief.
Trump is also likely to declare success in U.S. mediation in Afghanistan as a justification to end the 17-year-long U.S. engagement there. Rand Paul, a Republican senator from Kentucky, is also a passionate supporter of the withdrawal of U.S. troops from both Syria and Afghanistan.
By any measurement, we are victorious. We killed bin Laden. We have disrupted the terror camps in Afghanistan. Is Afghanistan a mess? Sure, it's a mess. It's always been a mess and always will be a mess.
But some lawmakers on both sides of the aisle oppose the withdrawal.
One of our colleagues, the senator from Florida, Senator Rubio, said, really, terrorism is like a tumor. It's like a cancer. And you can try to eliminate it, but if you're unsuccessful in eliminating it, even though you've shrunk it, it will come back as soon as you remove the pressure.
Trump also is expected to claim progress in his administration's trade negotiations with China and talks with North Korea on denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Zlatissa Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
A new UN report warns the U.S.-China trade wars will hurt international trade, with the two economic superpowers emerging among the biggest losers. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA.
U.S.-China trade discussions are underway. If no agreement is reached by March 1st, tariffs on $200 billion in Chinese goods will increase from 10% to 25%. A new UNCTAD study warns the repercussions on international trade will be massive, leading to a downturn in the global economy and instability in commodities and financial markets. Pamela Koch Hamilton is director of UNCTAD's Division on International Trade in Goods and Services and Commodities. She says small and lower-income countries will suffer, as their exposure to external shocks will make it very difficult for them to maintain any level of resilience.
Stagflation, leading to job losses and higher unemployment, and more importantly, the possibility of a contagion effect, or what we call a reactionary effect, leading to a cascade of other trade distortionary measures, because everybody then will get in the game, and it will be very difficult.
The study predicts higher tariffs will trigger currency wars and devaluation. It warns the impact on global value chains and intermediate suppliers will be devastating. For example, the UN report says the relocation from East Asian value chains will result in a reduction of almost $160 billion to the region. Coke Hamilton says the retaliatory tariffs imposed by the United States have not achieved their intended effect. She says they have not resulted in increased domestic production, but rather will lead to a diversion of trade to third countries.
If the tariffs rise to 25%, what will occur is simple. They will limit trade from China. However, it will not be effective in protecting domestic firms. So suppliers in the rest of the world will be more competitive. Trade diversion effects in favor of third countries.
UN economists say the European Union will emerge as the biggest winner, capturing about $70 billion of U.S.-China bilateral trade. They say Japan, Mexico, and Canada will each capture more than $20 billion. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. This is VOA's International Edition. A new research project examines the link between North Korea and the secret police agencies of some Eastern European countries after World War II. The project has uncovered documents on Korean War orphans brought to Poland. It also has found information about American and British prisoners of war. The North Korean Archives is a joint project. The Citizens Alliance for North Korean Human Rights in Seoul and the Institute of National Remembrance Commission of the Prosecution of Crimes Against the Polish Nation are carrying out the research. The goal is to study entities suspected of committing human rights abuses in North Korea. The researchers hope the project will spark interest in such studies in South Korea. Joanna Hosania co-authored a report on the research.
We hope that it will be helpful also to parties pursuing future accountability for North Korea, such as certain NGOs working on these issues and the UN.
Hosaniak said the research can be used by victims of human rights abuses in North Korea. The project is looking at documents from the 1950s to the 1990s. It has found about 100 files on young North Koreans aged 8 to 19 who were taken to Poland in the 1950s. Researchers believe as many as 1,700 North Korean war orphans were sent to Poland. Hosaniak says the documents provide names, pictures, and other information about the children.
This finding has a unique value because until so far there have been no details really on these children.
Hosniak added that documents on American and British POWs have been found. They had been parted by North Korean and Chinese secret police. As U.S. President Donald Trump prepares for a second meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un later this month, rights activists have repeated calls for North Korea's rights record to be part of the discussion. Among the top stories in the world, the Taliban kills up to 40 government troops in separate attacks in northern Afghanistan as a controversial intra-Afghan dialogue began today in Moscow. Facebook bans four armed insurgent groups in Myanmar from its platform, and Pope Francis celebrated Mass in Abu Dhabi today as he closed a brief but historic visit to the United Arab Emirates. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
An international team of astronomers wanted to determine the age of a globular star cluster called NGC 6752. So they secured observation time with the Hubble Space Telescope to observe and photograph some of the old and faint stars in the star cluster. As they studied a grouping of white dwarf stars, the astronomers noticed that the Hubble's remarkable vision also revealed a previously unknown dwarf galaxy hiding behind the cluster. The astronomers nicknamed this hidden galaxy Bedden 1 and describe it as a relatively small-sized, elongated galaxy that measures about 3,000 light-years long. It's thought that the Bedden 1 dwarf galaxy is located about 30 million light-years away from our galaxy and that it formed some 13 billion years ago. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
16 leading global human rights organizations are calling for an international investigation into China's mass incarceration of some 1 million ethnic Uyghurs and other Turkic Muslims in Xinjiang province. The groups are urging the United Nations Human Rights Council, which begins its next session later this month, to adopt a resolution establishing an international fact-finding mission to Xinjiang. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
This issue first came to light in August when the UN Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination reviewed China's human rights record. One of the committee members unexpectedly confronted the Chinese delegation about reports of 1 million Uyghurs being held in large detention centers in Xinjiang. Sarah Brooks, an Asia advocate for the group International Service for Human Rights, describes the development as a turning point.
It became a moment where, much to its surprise, the Chinese government and the delegation that they sent here to Geneva to stand in front of that committee of experts really were put in the hot seat. They had to answer very difficult questions, and I think they found themselves needing to be able to muster a response which was more than it doesn't exist.
Over time, that response has evolved to try to get ahead of worldwide criticism. China now acknowledges it is holding Uyghurs and other Turkic Muslims in so-called political or vocational education camps. Ken Roth, executive director of Human Rights Watch, says the Chinese government claims it is trying to counter extremism and terrorism, a claim he refutes.
The purpose of this detention is to erase the ethnic and religious identities of Turkic Muslims and ensure their loyalty to only the Chinese government, the Communist Party, and the would-be leader for life, Xi Jinping.
Human rights groups report people in the camps are subjected to forced political indoctrination, are pressured to renounce their faith, are frequently mistreated, and in some cases tortured. They say detainees are denied contact with their families, given no access to lawyers, and are being held with no end in sight. Kumi Naidu, the Secretary General of Amnesty International, calls Xinjiang an outdoor prison. He says it is a place of high surveillance, political indoctrination, forced cultural assimilation, arbitrary arrests, and disappearances. He says ethnic minorities have been turned into strangers in their own land.
So large is the number of people detained that the government had to open up orphanages to take in the children of families whose parents were being re-educated. Yet China continues to obfuscate and deny access to the region to independent observers, despite repeated requests by the United Nations and others.
Naidu says China must be held accountable for its repressive actions. He says member states must act by mandating the UN to investigate the situation. Kenneth Roth says he agrees. Given the scale of the atrocities being committed by China, he says the muted global outcry is deeply regrettable.
People worldwide were rightly outraged by Trump's Muslim travel ban. But when China forces 1 million Muslims to renounce Islam on pain of endless detention, the response has largely been ho-hum.
Roth says a UN fact-finding mission to Xinjiang is urgently needed to bring the truth to light, particularly in the face of China's denials and conflicting narratives. He notes the integrity of the UN Human Rights Council is at stake. A principle of defense in human rights, he says, is holding even the most powerful council members to account, especially when the abuses are so severe. He adds the public shaming that comes from a formal investigation and exposure of the mass detentions is the only thing that is likely to change China's treatment of the Uyghurs. The greatest concentration of Muslims in China is in Xinjiang province, where 10 million Uyghurs live. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
In Zimbabwe, migration from rural to urban areas has created a demand for housing, leading to construction on wetlands and concerns about the environment and water supplies. Columbus Mafunga has more from Harare.
Conservation groups in Zimbabwe warn that the invasion of the country's wetlands for infrastructure development and streambank cultivation in urban areas threatens the management of underground water and the availability of the resource. They say the problem has been exacerbated by people moving from rural to urban areas. Those include Zevai Muchichwe, a father of three. Muchichwe says he built his home on a wetland 3 years ago as Harare battled to contain the migration from the rural parts of the country. Now he says part of the dwelling has cracked and fallen. Muchichwe says he's waiting for authorities to tell him whether he will be there permanently as the structure needs to be reinforced. He says it was built hurriedly with cheap material, and because of the location, the problem of water underground exists. We thought we'd be here for just a year, he said. Harare authorities say they will soon start water rationing because of low levels. Dorothy Wakeling of conservation group Harare Wetlands Trust says she was not surprised by the announcement. She says people are disturbing wetlands, which are supposed to be gradually releasing water into the city's water bodies.
If you don't have this and you've got monoculture, all you get is runoff, and you've lost the opportunity for the water to get into the ground, which has been so carefully laid out by nature. It's not there by mistake, and we're discarding it for one plant or buildings, when that is the way we get our water. You can't make water come any other way.
The group says it hopes that President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government does not allow construction of the Monavu wetland, which it says holds water for most Harare water bodies. Steady Kangata is from Zimbabwe's environmental agency. Kangata says the agency is working to ensure any disturbance of wetlands and stream banks is at a minimum.
We must not be selfish when it comes to the environment. We are urging anyone who would want to do any form of construction to ascertain the nature as well as the status of the piece of land where they want to undertake the development. The entire world is about the green economy. It's the economy of the environment, where the environment is the pinnacle of any economy, and we should mainstream environmental issues in anything that we do.
For now, Muchichwe's family and neighbors remain uncertain as to whether they will have a place to stay. Given that the rainy season is not set to end until about late March, they might be sleeping on wet floors. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Well, Australian mining giants Rio Tinto and BHP are supporting greater Indigenous recognition in Parliament. BHP Chief Executive Andrew McKenzie said the company, like the nation as a whole, has unfinished business with the indigenous peoples of Australia and that it cannot stand on the sidelines. Critics, however, believe it could be a cynical move by the mining sector to gain favor with tribal groups which have lands rich in natural resources. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
BHP and Rio Tinto are supporting a campaign to change Australia's constitution to give a formal voice to Aboriginal people in federal parliament. The mining giants employ thousands of indigenous workers and are backing a demand from community leaders called the Uluru Statement from the Heart, made in 2017 for a special Aboriginal body to advise Parliament. BHP Chief Executive Officer Andrew McKenzie said the reform would empower indigenous people and would boost the reconciliation process.
We now have a chance to create a new chapter in our history. A voice that will establish a bridge across that gulf. Now, I know there are fears that a constitutionally enshrined voice, confirmed by referendum, will deepen cultural divisions and is undemocratic. I don't think those fears stand up to scrutiny.
BHP will contribute about $700,000 to a project raising awareness about the benefits of an Indigenous voice to the Australian Parliament. Many of the company's operations are located on or close to Indigenous land. BHP says it acknowledges the right of First Australians to maintain their culture, identity, traditions and customs. But there is scepticism about the company's motives. Jacinta Price, an Aboriginal councillor in the central Australian city of Alice Springs, believes the miners' support for constitutional reform is a superficial move.
We need to have a bit more of a discussion. I don't know that just simply throwing your support behind something that we're not sure what that actually looks like is helpful. And in a way, perhaps it is a way of these companies to look better in the eyes of Indigenous people, considering it's Indigenous people's land that, you know, they want to be involved in.
Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison has rejected the mining giant's push for greater Indigenous rights in federal parliament. He said he was focused on practical measures to help Aboriginal communities. Indigenous people make up about 3% of the population, but suffer high rates of poverty, ill health and imprisonment. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Thank you, Phil, where many East Asian countries are celebrating the Lunar New Year today. The holiday is marked with big family meals, fireworks, parades, and gifts of money for children. Celebrations took place in cities such as Seoul, Hanoi, and Singapore, with people wishing friends and family good luck and prosperity. In China, millions of people left the capital, Beijing, and other large cities to visit relatives in the provinces or to travel to other countries. In countries across Southeast and East Asia, Buddhists burn incense and give prayers for their ancestors during the holiday. This year is the year of the pig. It is the last in the 12-year cycle of the Chinese zodiac, each year being marked by a different animal sign. You've been listening to VOA's International Edition. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.